Hello and welcome to The Indoorsment, your podcast guide for the great indoors. For the first time in 2019, the year of our Lord, I am your host, Matt.
What does the year of our Lord even mean? I'm Cliff.
I don't fucking know.
It just sounds like some old English, like, fancy shit to say.
Yeah.
Hey, cool,
that's like two swears in the first minute of audio for the year of 2019. Congratulations, us. We did it. We earned our explicit tag.
Hooray.
Yay. Welcome to 2019, Cliff.
Well, yeah, it's a complete non-event to celebrate New Year's Eve, which is consistent with my personality of pessimism and hating everything.
It's true. Nothing's changed in 2019, The year of our Lord. Did you have a good Christmas?
Hey, it was all right.
Me too. I had to go to Canberra. I don't know what I did wrong.
I was going to say, so you didn't have a good Christmas?
I was only there for like 2 days total, so...
Yeah, but even still.
Yeah. Several hours in the airport, because my flight got delayed by 4 hours.
Yeah. You're like, what, 1 hour flight? 1.5 hour flight?
Yeah, 1 hour if I'm lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it got delayed, and there's only two places to eat in Canberra Airport, and one of them was closed.
But so that was fun. What you want is, the ideal situation is for delays... You want everything to be closed.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's it. I definitely want my only option to be a $30 burger.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah,
Was it worth the pay?
No, I didn't get it. I bought a shitty sandwich for way too much money.
Oh.
Yeah, it was great. My favorite thing was when my flight was delayed for the second time, they said, we'll offer you all a complimentary food and drinks voucher. And I went and got it, which meant I had to leave the secure area of the airport to go back to the main counters. And I got my voucher, and it was $5.
It's like they don't even understand their own airport.
Yeah, I couldn't even afford a coffee.
Yeah. I mean, you could barely afford anything for $5 at an airport.
And I had to go back through security again for the millionth time.
Boo.
Yay! Anyway, Christmas. Did you have a good New Year's?
I went to the cricket. It was right.
Nah. I went out for 2 days straight.
Nice.
On New Year's Eve till like 3 a.m, which is out of character for me. And then on New Year's Day, went to 2 different day parties and got home at 5:30 a.m. So it's a good thing I cancelled work that day. Because, oh boy. Anyway, it's 2019. It's a year of fresh opportunities and everything is shiny and sparkly and new and ready to get ruined again.
Well, I mean, not from my perspective. Everything's already a desolate wasteland.
I do like Fallout. So, it's the start of a new year, and we're meant to do this before the end of the old year.
Well, see, I actually prefer it here, because now the year is officially over, so now you can actually comment on everything that came out that year. I feel like jumping the gun a few weeks early, it's not proper, it's not right.
I mean, we all have our beliefs. Nothing really came out at the end of the year. The only thing I remember was the final DLC for Spider-Man.
And that was good. Really went under the radar. I did not hear a thing about it.
Yeah, it came out on like the 21st, which was a choice. It was good. It laid a lot of like ground level hints for what's coming next. And I'm excited for it. Mm-hmm. But we're not actually going to talk about anything from 2018, because fuck 2018. She's dead to me.
Except the entire point of our podcast is our games of the year for 2018.
Yeah. It's like a eulogy for 2018. We're not actually...
I mean, you realize you can still play the games that came out in 2018,
no,
right?
No. At the stroke of midnight, New Year's Day, I have all of my computers and consoles set to automatically delete anything that was created in the year before.
And remove it from your Steam library and your Live and...
Yep. Delete it from any email receipts, all of it's gone. And because I have a terrible memory, that means it's gone from my brain as well.
I don't believe you.
I'm constantly living in a world of wonder. Everything's new to me every day.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, let's look back at 2018 and decide what our respective games of the year are.
I got a list.
I also have a list.
I wouldn't say it's any particular order. Actually, no. Looking at it now, it's in a definite order. But
I did order mine.
Yeah. But you know, we'll have some great games. We'll have some games that were like, they were pretty good. But maybe not great. And we'll have some games that's like, well, maybe we shouldn't just not have at all.
Yeah, there'll be a game that wins the gold medal, there'll be a game that wins the wooden spoon, and there'll be a game that gets beaten severely with the wooden spoon.
But not in a fun way.
No, I do have a dishonorable mention and honorable mentions before we get to my game of the year for this year. So,
Me
yeah,
too.
let's work our way up the list. I bet we're gonna have the same game of the year, lol.
Likely, if not, they're gonna occupy very similar spots, I think.
Interesting, interesting. I mean, we have so much game crossover, so.
I think we've got a few game crossovers. You play a lot more JRPGs than I do.
I do.
Yeah.
I'm actually very excited for Tales of Vesperia Remastered to come out on everything, including Switch, later this week. Because it's one I never got to play, because it came out on the previous console generation when I wasn't really actively a 360 player. Yeah, so let's start with. So we've done a top five, basically. And let's start with your number five, firstly.
Cool. My number five was Warhammer Vermintide 2.
Okay,
I
I can
really
see
like
that
this
for you.
game. It's very Left 4 Deady, but it adds extra stuff into it that means you want to keep kind of going back to it. And I really want to go back to it. I just want to go back to it with my mates, and they're lagging a bit behind on that. So it's a four-player co-op horde mode, kind of like point A to point B. Survive to the end deal, Left 4 Dead style, almost
Okay.
identically, but with Warhammer. So lots of
Okay.
like goblin-y, orc-y, gross, evil creatures. With some pretty funny banter from the main characters because they're set main characters. Most importantly, it's where Left 4 Dead just kind of is just the characters, and then that's all you do. You just collect the weapons and the thing. This has like a loot system, so you can actually like you can. It's got a loot box system, but it's not microtransaction-y. It's all
Okay.
like you earn, like you go through the level, and if you do certain objectives in the level, you get like you might get like a special loot box for doing all the like this bonus objective in the level, or you just get
Okay.
like one for finishing the level. And then you open it up, you get some loot. It's related to what you want in your character. You equip it, and you can do more damage, that kind of stuff. Do more cool stuff. So it's
Now, out
not,
of interest,
yeah.
is Vermintide the game that I saw coverage of earlier in the year, which was people noping the fuck out over the fact that it had swarms of rats that would roam the ground?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay, because someone
Yeah.
said their like rat swarm technology is very good and I hate it.
Yeah, it's if you're not familiar with Warhammer, it's like a fantasy kind of Lord of the Ringsy, goblin-y orc versus dwarves, elves, humans, all that deal. But it's a very much it seems like a very dark, more dark universe. It
Okay.
everything's
Yeah, I
just
definitely
worse
saw
in every
dark when I
way.
saw of it.
But it's very, very good. It's like Left 4 Dead. So if you like Left 4 Dead, this is also very good, but it gives you a bit of the ability to kind of progress a bit more. So the replayability is better. I don't ever feel like I need to play Left 4 Dead ever again or Left 4 Dead 2, because
Yeah.
I've put like a couple hundred hours into each of them, and it's just I'm done. Like there's nothing more for me in that game.
Yeah.
Even new maps just doesn't do anything for me. I want
Fair.
Left 4 Dead 3 with more of a RPG kind of progression-y system built into it.
Well, we'll see how that goes.
But yeah, that's
Okay.
my number five. It was great. I want to play more
Nice.
of it, but I'm waiting for my dumbass friends to buy it.
Rude. So, my number five
Is Vermintide 2 as
is.
well?
It
Yay!
is. We are on such the same wavelength.
It's very much a Gospa game. Multiplayer. Yeah.
Yeah, multiplayer,
You're all
dark
about it.
fantasy.
Yeah.
I'm all about it.
Love it.
Rats? I mean, come on.
Yep.
No, my number five is Donut County.
All sunshine, happiness, and unicorns.
Exactly. Donut County was a game by Ben Esposito. I loved it from the moment I saw early footage of it because it was just like a weird, dumb concept. Controlling a hole in the ground to suck everything in to make it bigger. Reverse Katamari Damacy. It turned out to have like a kind of goofy, fun storyline as well, which I didn't know about going in. The kind of like cell shaded graphics looked amazing. And I got to play it on my iPad, and I haven't played anything on my iPad in ages, so that was kind of nice.
Yeah, cool.
And it's now out on consoles and mobile and Switch even, so it's really getting out there, which I'm very happy about. Yeah, it was a short experience, but it was a really nice experience, so I liked it.
Awesome.
I don't know if he's announced his next project or not yet. But I do know that I still want to see if he does merch because the loading screen between levels, because this hole is developed because of a raccoon delivery person. So the kind of Raccoon King's slogan comes up as the loading screen, which is "Have a garbage day," in this really nice flowing cursive. I would love to get that on a shirt, just because that is how I feel inside. Yeah.
It looks pretty fun from what I've seen of it.
Yeah, yeah, it was really good.
It looks like a very, just like lighthearted, like whole, like, just fun.
Yeah.
Nothing weighs you down in that game at all.
I was a little disappointed how fun it was because I burnt through it pretty damn quickly.
Seem also like a game, yeah, that maybe isn't going to be too long or going to, I guess, have much depth for like a long haul type game.
Yeah.
But a very good, like fun, like, you know, few hours experience.
Yeah, it's the kind of game where the concept, like the core conceit is really fun, but you wouldn't want it to last too long because it would burn out very quickly. Like, they did some fun things. It wasn't just dropping things into a hole. There were different elements, like you had to catch a bunch of snakes and then you sort of got to use the snakes in the level, or you'd pull down something that's burning so you'd have smoke coming out of the hole so you could use it to inflate a balloon or whatever. So they did, like, mess around with it, but again, there's only so much you can do with that before you're just Dunsky.
Yeah, but it seems fun.
Yeah, I recommend it.
Hmm.
What's your number four?
My number four is a game that only sort of came out in December.
Okay.
And I've got a bit of a nerd boner for this type of kind of like arty, more exploratory game, more than it is an actual, I guess, a game with like levels and such like that. But it is Gris.
Oh, that's an interesting choice for you.
Yeah, I loaded it up and they have like a an intro and the music immediately caught me in the game.
Oh yeah, it's great.
It's amazing and it looks like that. It's got that cool like black ink and watercolor aesthetic.
Yeah,
very artistic style.
The watercolor effect was amazing. This, it very much reminded me of the UbiArt engine, which they used for Valiant Hearts and Rayman and a couple of other games. Child of Light was one of them. But I felt like here they'd obviously captured like footage of dropping watercolor paints into water or something, because they had it moving and there's no way you could render that. Like, that would have to be a video overlay of some sort.
I'm assuming they did some very clever stuff with
100%.
Yeah, with sprites, because you can do like a lot. You'll be surprised how by being clever with just static sprites you can make stuff look very flowy. So I'd be interested to actually look to see how they pulled it off, but I think it's, the answer is probably a lot simpler than you'd think.
Yeah.
But very, very cool game. You are just a I don't really know what you are. Some sort of like,
I think she's just an abstracted cloaked woman.
Yeah, I feel like she's more like a personification of like maybe, you know, like a some sort of, not an elemental force, but just like something.
She's kind of a creature of emotion, yeah. I think, because I haven't finished it yet. I've been really enjoying playing it, but I've been playing it with my other half because he fucking loves the art.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get any further without him because I'll be accused of.
But you're not a simple, you're not just a normal person. You're not in a normal world in any way.
Definitely not. It's very abstract, but apparently it's a journey through emotions or a journey through grief or something.
Got that, yeah. The cracked hand and stuff like that, and the cracked faces, yeah. They look like cracked statues if for people that don't know what we're talking about. People, like sculptures, like statues and stuff.
Of people grieving, crying, that kind of stuff. The world is gorgeous. You start out in black and white and you're sort of, each area is you kind of learning different mechanics and sometimes gaining a new ability on your way to returning a color to the world.
Yeah, so every level is like, you know, it's like red is the first one and then green and blue. And so you're adding more and more color in watercolor style. And it kind of bleeds into the world.
Yeah, and it's great because you are kind of circling back and forth from a central hub zone. And each time you come back, based on the color and what the sort of the gameplay element that color introduced was, it gets brought back into the hub world and it just gains new detail and new life and new depth. Blue is kind of related to water, unsurprisingly. So there's suddenly waterfalls when you get back and it unlocks new ways of getting around the hub and adds a layer of sound and color. It's amazing.
Yeah, like, it's great. But it's one of those games that you kind of just want to, you don't want to rush through. Because you want to take your time. And the great thing about it is it's seamless. So you go up. It's kind of weird to think if the hub is like, you know, coordinates like 0, 0. Because it's a 2D game. It's not there's no Z axis on it.
Yeah.
you can go like massively high up in the y-axis, massively low in the y, left and right, like x and y, along the x. It's the game is huge and it's all seamless, so you just walk to the edge of the map. So
yeah, I would love no to loading
get,
screens.
I'd love to get a picture of the whole map.
That would be intense. That would be because really cool. It's designed so even when you're transitioning back to the hub, it's not like, you know, fade to black or pass through a black area and then just be there. Like, everything is designed to be connected. You just can see the walk, path you're taking. Just
glide, jump, back to
yeah.
it. Climb back to it. So, yeah, it's a great game. I loved it.
I'm looking forward to finishing it. Once I finish the game, I'm going to look up what the sort of hidden collectibles actually do.
Yeah, because there's a bunch of stuff in there that I'm like, that's a thing. Like, I know that's a thing, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed that sort of on the exit point to all of the different areas, there's basically a tracker for how many of the hidden spots you've unlocked. So I've never managed to get all of them in an area. I don't know what happens. I'm assuming it's just an achievement, or maybe it's something like Journey, where if you found all of the MacGuffins, you unlocked the white cloak instead of the red cloak. Just a little touch like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to keep playing.
Yeah. The one thing I will mention before we move on, though, is I love the kind of layers of abstraction. When you're pulled out to the sort of game playing view, she's got like rendered hair and she's got the cloak, but then she has stick arms and stick legs, like just coming down to points. But when they go into cinematics or close-up shots, which are beyond gorgeous, this like hand-animated beauty, she'll have more detail, but then they'll pull back and she'll only have the sticky bits again, just because it's cute. And I guess I don't want to render that level of detail at every second.
Yeah. So a big thank you to, was it Devolver?
Yes, I do believe it was a Devolver game.
They very happily sent us codes for these. So, and I very much thank them because, yeah, this is it's one of my games of the year. It's great.
Yeah, no, I didn't put it in my list. I got very close, to be honest. But yeah, glad that we got to talk about it. Mm. And thank you, Devolver. We love you dearly.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to see your next E3 presentation. Okay, so my number four game is not Gris. Or Gris. I think it's Gris, or with a like, pronounced S because it's Spanish.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. It's a very arty game, so it's probably got a non-standard like phonetic pronunciation.
Yeah. But yeah, my number four is actually another indie title, The Gardens Between.
Oh, right on, yeah.
Which, again, we were very kindly sent codes by the publishers. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing, like we've talked about this before, it's like a 2D, or like wrapping 2D, like puzzle game where you advance and retract time by moving your character, a la Superhot, but with less murder. Great puzzles, great aesthetic, great storyline, all done without like dialogue or any kind of spoken or written text. And it was just a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, I mean, this very nearly made it on my list as well. It was definitely up there. But Gris beat it out. I think just because of the like, Guns Between is very much, it's a linear story. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's weird to say for a time-manipulating game that it's a linear story, but it is. It takes you kind of through this event. Whereas Gris is, I like that it's a bit more of an exploratory thing. Like, I like that I don't really know what's coming up and I could go anywhere. So that's why Gris beat out. That's a really good reason.
Yeah. Yeah, there were definitely moments in that game where I audibly gasped, which after all these years, I'm a fairly jaded gamer, but any game that sort of hooks into me emotionally like that. Beautiful. Gardens Between did it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought the story was really sweet, really bittersweet.
When I got to the end, I just went, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, when you find out what the whole thing's about, it's just like, oh, yeah. And like, a really beautiful, like, kind of a beautiful, like, sigh. Like, I completely get why this game is a game.
I especially get it because I am a person who grew up as a Defense Force kid. I moved interstate every 2 years, restarted my life, pretty much. So, it hit a special spot deep in my little child heart that I keep in a box. So yeah, Gardens Between, it's on everything. I think I played it on PS4, but it's on Switch. I don't know if it's on mobile, but it's on all the consoles and PC, I assume.
It's good. Pick it up if you can, if you haven't already.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay, that's number four. Shall we, before we keep going on the list of good games, give some dishonorable mentions?
Yeah, so my first dishonorable mention is going to be a bit more of a... It's not a specific thing in terms of a game. Mm-hmm. It's more an... I fucking hate exclusivity. Like, I fucking hate it. There are games that I didn't play this year that I probably would have really liked to play just because of a petty bullshit console war. And I'm not willing to pay like another $500 plus the games on top to play them. I got lucky when I played Spider-Man earlier this year because I was able to borrow my mate's console, but I can't always do that. So yeah, I just hate exclusivity. So that's just a widespread like a hate that was especially prevalent this year because at the moment PlayStation is beating Xbox in its exclusivity. Like, 100% it is.
Oh, yeah.
I still feel like the 360 beat the PS4, or the PS3, sorry.
I think that's fair, yeah.
In that generation. And the PS2, like, trounced the Xbox because the PS2 was already, like, a setup kind of thing. And the PS2 was, like, legendary. Like, they only stopped making games, like, what, 2 years ago or something? A year ago?
Yeah, it was pretty recent.
Yeah, but I think the PS4 is definitely winning, and we've seen Microsoft as a direct result buy up game studios to get some more exclusivity back, which I still fucking hate, even though I'll be the benefit of it because I have an Xbox now, assuming the games are good. But I hate that I'm gated from some games. It'd be like going to say, Avengers Infinity War is coming out. You can't fucking watch it because we're not going to Hoyts, and so you have to drive across the other side of the city to go see a movie. So that would piss me off in the same way that this pisses me off.
I mean, I have so many movie theater options around here in, like, the cool suburban neighborhoods of Melbourne, so...
Well, imagine instead that it was like, oh, Infinity War's come out, but we're not releasing it in Australia.
I mean, that's definitely happened before, so...
And it's annoying, and it I know why that they do exclusivity, but it's really annoying because I want to play good games, but I'm not willing to fork out another $500 for a game or two.
Yeah, I think exclusivity... When it's an in-house studio, that's fine. You've got to build products that sell your brand. When it's an outside studio that makes a deal with a publisher to be exclusive, it can be kind of shitty. Timed exclusives are at least a better measure of it.
Timed exclusives are way better. If they said God of War is exclusive for a year on PS4, but then we're going to bring it out on Xbox, I could get that because I'd be like, okay, fine. I want to play this game on my list and I can pick it up a year later.
Yeah.
Cool, great. PS4 wins because it's all about when it comes out the first time. The company actually gets like a double dip kind of thing for it. PS4 gets the hardcore people buying it straight away. That would be great, but yeah, I won't play God of War ever just because I don't have PS4.
Unfortunate. I mean, that one is like an internally developed title, so I can understand it.
I know. I know why they exist. I know that's why they do them, but it pisses me off.
But at the same time, there is... good timed exclusives and bad timed exclusives. I will never forgive Rise of the Tomb Raider being exclusive on Xbox for an entire fucking year before it came out on PlayStation. That's too much. I don't like that. No. Okay.
But anyway, that's just one thing in general. What I will go into a specific game is I recently went to play Forza Horizon 4.
Yeah.
With my mates, and it's pretty good. It's split up into seasons. It's like a British theme. You start off in autumn and then you go into winter, I think, and spring and summer. Boy, this game really does not want you to play online with your friends.
Really?
Yeah, we were trying to play it. Like, I started out, it says, like, hey, cool, you've qualified for the autumn season. You've now got, like, online unlocked. You know, cool, so I want you to play the game a bit to learn it, and then you go online. My friends were already in winter. I couldn't join their game. And it would tell me I couldn't join because I hadn't qualified for the winter season yet, only the autumn season. But okay. So I thought, okay, cool. If I can't join the game, I'll just go off and continue to like do stuff so I can maybe try and qualify for winter. No, you can't do that because only a party leader can start an event. So I joined the game. It had told me I couldn't join the game, but it treated me like I'd joined the game. Like it was fucking horrible. So what we worked out is that if I host the game and invite my friends in instead of trying to join my friends, they can join backwards into all of them.
But you can't join forwards.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. You can do a thing where you can start an adventure. So you can choose a bunch of events around the whole map and do stuff. Except the adventures are only two team events. You're red or you're blue. So if you've got like five mates or three mates, you can't just race each other all on all. You have to do it in groups. It was just, the whole thing was just a horrible experience. They fucked it up massively.
Yeah, that's kind of shitty. I don't like that.
I don't understand why I can't. I might not be in winter, but why can't I just join and do the races? I'm not progressing my career or anything like that. Make me do that offline. Let me at least join and like be in the winter conditions and stuff like that, in the winter races with my friends. Just let me join it. Like, why can't you let me join it? It was mind-boggling. Like, it pissed me off so much. Then we finally got it to work. It was like, oh, yeah, cool. And then one of our friends was like, oh, I got to go now. So I was like, oh, yeah, if you're going to go, fuck it, I'm going to go. Like, I've just had enough of this game. Like, great game. I loved playing it. It did not want me to play online.
That's unfortunate.
Yep, terrible. Terrible.
And for a car racing game, very, very dangerous. For a
AAA, title with a long history of being very good, terrible. Absolutely terrible. It's a great game otherwise, just doesn't want me to play with my friends online.
Ridiculous. I don't even understand the point of gating it when it comes to multiplayer.
You're like,
why? Just let it be a free-for-all.
Yeah. Gate cosmetic shit and make it so that I still can't buy my cars and stuff like normal.
Mm.
But just let me do stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was woeful. So that's my my dishonorable mention. Fuck you, Forza Horizon 4.
Whatever, Forza. Mm-hmm. Well, my dishonorable mention is not Forza Horizon 4. Sorry to say. There's another game that I didn't like this year. It is Avalanche's Just Cause 4.
I didn't play it.
Yeah, you made the right choice. So, I played Just Cause 2 as my first Just Cause game, where they'd sort of settled the formula, sort of gotten into their groove a bit more than the original. It was a lot of fun. You went around blowing up shit. You did cool missions. You unlocked cars and shit. Fantastic. You grappled things. Good times. Just Cause 3 introduced a lot of cool mechanics, like being able to grapple two objects together to make them smoosh. They added a wingsuit for another method of traversal instead of just the parachute. They also made the parachute infinite instead of like a consumable material like it was in Just Cause 2, which was very frustrating. The problem was, on PS4 at least, the load times were garbage. The frame rate dropped to unplayable around explosions, which is a problem for a game about explosions.
It's like core mechanic is exploding shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It got slow. It was unplayable when that happened. You couldn't react in time to avoid enemy fire. It felt like he was way too defenseless when it came to getting hit. Like, yeah, you want to be zipping around, but if you actually have to stop and fight enemies, you are more often than not like constantly having to escape to wait for your health to recharge and all this shit. So I never finished it, despite all the great things that it added to the franchise. Just Cause 4, I was like, oh, cool, they'll have fixed it. They'll have, taken in all the feedback they got from this game and made, a great sort of ultimate version of the product. Nope. It has all of the mechanics out of the box, like the wingsuit you have straight away instead of earning it in the game. They didn't have the jetpack wingsuit that was in the DLC, which is a little unfortunate because that was super fun. Because the least fun thing about the wingsuit is having to maintain momentum so you didn't just dive into the ground. But while the frame rate is better, the gameplay is worse. The physics engine has shit itself, and the characterization has vanished. So,
I mean, don't kid yourself. This game is not about characterization. This game is about doing cool shit and exploding stuff.
I mean, they've always had elements like, the last one was him returning to the country he grew up in, I think. So they were kind of giving him some backstory. In Just Cause 4, you meet Rico's dad, I think. I didn't get that far. But the problem is, where at least Just Cause 1, 2, 3 had a linear-ish storyline in that there was sort of a progression of main missions to lead you through the game along with all the side diversions. This one, you can do anything in any order, so nothing feels important. Your overall objective is to take down these three weather machines, like a tornado machine, a blizzard machine, and a sandstorm machine. But to get to that mission, you have to do a bunch of submissions while unlocking the map by taking it over with your sort of freedom fighters, which means doing a lot of garbage activities to get the points to unlock freedom fighter squads to then be able to unlock the sections to unlock the ones that you need to do the missions in, so you can then do the next mission, so you can then do the actual interesting mission.
All right, my entire opinion of this game hinges on this question.
Yes.
Very seriously. When you defeat or try and explode the sandstorm machine, is there a reference to Darude?
Don't know, didn't get that far.
All right. Let us know. Someone let us know. Because...
yeah.
I'll play it. No, that's not true. I won't play it. I'll watch a YouTube video of that reference if there is one. Otherwise, I'll just think there's a piece of shit game that should never, ever be played ever.
Yeah. Nothing feels important. Nothing is, like, fun. Almost all of the missions are go into this base, find these four things, switches, terminals, turbines, and hack or destroy them, or defend them for a minute. Then that is it. It wasn't fun. And previously the games have all been about, you go into a base and you have to destroy all the red things so that you've then completely sort of anarchied the base or whatever they call it. None of that this time. Like, you can destroy things and they give you like points that you go towards earning the squads that you need to unlock sections, but it doesn't track what you're destroying in a base or anything. You don't have to 100% it, which sucks because that was the most fun. You'd like roam around a base being like, oh, I'm up to like 88% completion. There's only like two things I've got to destroy now. And you'd find like a tank hidden around a corner or something. So it gave you a reason to explore the map. None of that. Like, there's just fuck tons of challenges to do all over the place. No difficulty curve because you can do anything in any order. And yeah, it just feels pointless. It feels so gamey.
Have you ever seen either or both of the movies Crank and Crank No. 2 or Shoot 'Em Up?
Is Crank the one where he has like electricity connected to him or something?
He's got to shock his heart to keep it going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those movies are what I feel like Just Cause should be. Like, there's no real serious storyline. It's all stupid, but awesome.
That's what previous Just Cause games were,
That's what Just Cause is. It's stupid and awesome. Like, don't try to make it serious. Don't try and ground it. That's stupid. No one wants that. You just...
yeah.
Like, balls to the walls, like, crazy, over-the-top, awesome action is what you want. Mm. If it's not that, why even bring the game out?
Yeah. The biggest problem for me, though, this is a sandbox game based entirely on physics puzzles. Like, you get new stuff for your grapple thing, so it can... pull things together, it can work as booster rockets or balloons that let you sort of aerially manipulate things. Sure, there's lots of combinations you can do with that, whatever, don't care. The physics in the game is fundamentally broken. Like, it wasn't a problem in the last game, and I think it operates on the same, if not an evolution, of the game's engine. But just the number of, like fuckery moments I've had in this game... the balloons are the worst because it doesn't know how to defy gravity. I've tied balloons to things and have it float, and if you have rockets and balloons at the same time, it'll be like, oh, push, 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 completely spaz out. There's a helicopter that has like a magnetic arm that you can use to pick things up. If you pick up something too heavy, your helicopter will fly backwards until it touches something and then explodes. The worst one I saw was I was at an airbase doing a mission, and I realized that in the background, there were planes taking off. Like, you know, big jumbo jets. However, they were taking off, and I've uploaded this video to Facebook so you can see it. They would go from parallel to the ground, like a plane do when it's on the ground, to just pivoting directly 90 degrees pointing skywards. And then it would take off from that whilst twirling towards freedom. Ridiculous.
I mean, I don't think you understand how physics in the real world works. Is that not how planes just take off?
That is how planes take off.
Yeah.
But it's like ridiculous. Like, one of the missions I was doing, like, you're chasing after a car or something, and one of the moments is you have to sort of go down the runway and sort of dodge around this plane as it's taking off. You know, one of those cool sort of scripted, like, whoa moments that they have in these kind of games. The problem was, I'd get halfway down the runway being like, oh, I've got to dodge around this plane, and then it would just go, whoop, vertical mode, zoop. So it was no challenge. I was really disappointed. Like, I haven't finished it. I won't finish it. I won't even get to one of these big set-piece missions because there was just no drive. I've played, like, 20 hours or something, and I've just not had fun at all.
Just Cause 5, they need to stop, get the physics right, keep it as, like, open sandbox, and they need to make it, like, co-op jump in, like Dead Island and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Where you just jump in, and you need to be able to fuck around with your mates. 100%. You just need to fuck around in the sandbox with correct physics, but, like, not fully correct physics. Enough to be hilarious, but not actually break the game.
Yeah. They also need to get their faces out of the Uncanny Valley and their hair out of the looks like sheet of plastic zone. Like, it's just, it's so bad. Like, the lighting on Rico's head, the head you see the most, is wonk. All wonk. Anyway, let's move on.
Moving on. So, that was a pile of shit that we encountered this year.
There was more, but we only wanted to do one negative game each, because otherwise we could be here forever.
Yeah. That's my speciality, so we got to move on.
I know. Clifford, what is your number three game of the year, not 2018?
My number three is... I'm probably going to cop a bit of shit for being number three, and I bet you this is not your number three. My number three is Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
I found two more games better than Spider-Man. At least in my opinion, anyway.
There's definitely some candidates this year.
I mean, we talked a lot about Spider-Man. Everyone's played Spider-Man. It's great. I had issues with the very, like, finesse... when I needed something to be 100% accurate with the controls, I felt that that wasn't tight enough. Like, I couldn't, when I wanted to do something, it seemed to do something else. When I wanted to be inch perfect, but when you're just moving around the world in no particular, when you didn't need anything to be like 100% accurate and perfect, awesome controls. I just felt that when I was in a fight or something and I wanted to do something specific, it would always like seem to like, oh yeah, that's the thing I'm gonna lock on, and then just move onto something else and I'd move in a different direction.
I 100% did not have any troubles with the controls. I found it very natural, very intuitive. So I don't know what the gap is there.
Oh, no, like, it was great. Don't get me wrong. It's just when I wanted to, I felt like when I wanted to do something very specific, I couldn't always like reliably get it to do that one thing. Like it expressed itself most in the Taskmaster missions. I'm like, I
skipped them.
It's like, I want to go on that one specific spot. Like there's a spot that I want to get. And it would just like lock onto it for a second. And then as you're moving through the air, I would like hit the button. And as I hit it, it would like lock onto something else. And it would like fuck me out of it.
Yeah, I didn't have any of that.
Yeah, I had that. But I mean, you skipped the Taskmaster mission, so.
Yeah, but just like generally in controlling the game, like having to do like split second, like minute controls and that kind of stuff. Never had a problem.
No, it was great. It was only when I wanted to do a very specific, like I want to grapple to that exact spot.
Yeah.
That's when I had the problems and I couldn't do it. It just would not like reliably go there. I also wanted to be able to select like common spots when I wasn't necessarily facing in that exact direction. So if I was a bit sideways, but I knew that there was a ledge, like I wanted to lock onto the ledge, but it would never do it. That kind of thing. But anyway, like there was small nitpicky stuff. The game is great. It's amazing. We've talked about it a million times, so we don't need to go into
detail.
It's
so good.
Amazing, amazing game. Except for it gets a bit the samey when you're in the final boss fight and you do the same move over and over again.
I love the game. I did the DLC, as we said, The Last of Which came out right before Christmas. The DLC story was fantastic. Lots of cool hints, lots of cool kind of twists on the known Spider-Man canon. Like I said, definitely like laying some crumbs for where the sequel's going to go, because you 100% know they're going to do a sequel.
It's way too big and popular to not have a sequel.
Yeah. The bit that let me down, though, was... all of the side content in this was, like, the most boring ones that they were just redoing. Like, taking down clan hideouts, the screwball missions, which was basically just Taskmaster. It was, nah, don't like it. Don't want to do it. Like, side missions were fun, but the diversion, activities.
Yeah, it started out, like, when you first play it, it's great. When you're like, oh, look, there's a thing happening. And then just by the end of it, you're like, I fucking hate everything that's happening that isn't the exact, like, on the mission, on the direction I'm going at the moment. I'm just going to ignore everything else because I've done that 1,000 times.
Yeah, the The fun ones were fun for a long time. The tedious ones were fun the first few times. The only reason there's so many of them again is so they can add more, you know, base tokens, challenge tokens to unlock the additional costumes that we're adding. And I don't care about that. I'm sorry.
There's so much happening in that game, except that there's not, because the 90% of the stuff that's always happening is like, you know, the same three things.
Yeah. I will say that there was one of the kind of repetitive activities in the third DLC pack that I really liked. You get led to the first one as part of the kind of story chain. You find a former crime scene with like a case file attached to it that kind of gives you an audio diary that leads you down the path to finding like what it's all about, like leads towards Tombstone, all this kind of stuff. So they're really fun because you'd go to an area and say, okay, I'm in range of this thing. And then you'd have to search vertically under buildings, like on rooftops, on ceilings to find where the case file had been left. And that was cool because it encouraged that sort of like 3D thinking as opposed to it just being on the ground or on a roof. Mm. There was one that took me a while to get. It's like you find this chalk outline of where the body was between heavy lanes of traffic and a little traffic island. There's no clue where the case file is until like after much searching, I realized that there was like a footbridge above us and it was taped on the underside of it. So you had to actually think about moving like a spider can to find the file, which, yeah, I thought it was a really cool touch.
It's a very cool game. It does definitely have its flaws, but it's a very cool game because they prove that you can make a good superhero game and that you can make good...
Oh, so good.
That you can make good overall, like, flowing spider controls. Because swinging through the city with no real destination in mind is just the most fun thing.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Because the Batman Arkham games were good superhero games. Spider-Man is a great superhero game. And I love their version of kind of the canon. And the fact that he got included in the Spider-Geddon comic book event recently as his own distinct Spider-Man, which I thought was pretty cool. Cool. So my number three video game of the year 2018 is the Spyro Remaster. I really, really loved it. It was just so bright and so vibrant and so lovingly crafted, and it felt like the old game. And the old game was fun, unlike Crash Remastered, which was a pile of horse shit. But Spyro, amazing fun, so easy to put a little bit of time or a lot of time into it, because the levels are just recreations of like PS1 era levels, so they're quite contained and tight. You have to get real good at the controls without it being like ridiculously demanding. And based on how well it's been selling, I think we have a very good chance of a new Spyro game in the future, which I'm really happy about. Also, it's been a great game to play with my partner because he's not a big video game person, but he played Spyro as a kid. It's a bonding thing. I'm pretty sure he only comes to my house to play it now. Doesn't matter if I'm here or not. He'll just be like, oh, yeah, it's okay. I'll just play Spyro.
You'll go off and like, you know, live your life, and the Spyro percentage will be like, this is like 58%. And then you'll come home and magically it'll be like 62%.
Oh, we have separate save slots.
Right. Of course.
I love him, but I don't love him that much.
Gotcha.
But no, literally, he spent a sick day home from work at my house playing Spyro. So that's good. Spyro Remaster, amazing, gorgeous, stunning, beautiful, looks like a model. Love it. Spyro. That was a quick one, because there's not much to say about Spyro.
I mean, everyone knows what Spyro is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go get it. Like, it's amazing. It's sad that it hasn't come out on Switch, but...
I never, like, cared much for Spyro or Crash, to be honest, as a kid. Playing on PS1 and stuff like that. So I had other games, but, you know, I do know that it holds a very special place in people's hearts.
Yeah. Definitely my favorite bit is playing Spyro 3, Spyro Year of the Dragon, which was released early 2000s, I think, which you can really tell because like the side activities just go hog wild. There is a series of side levels that you play as Spyro the Dragon on a skateboard doing skateboard tricks.
I do remember that from back in the day, yeah.
Oh, so old school. I loved it. And it was so badly programmed. Like, the physics of it is just terrible. Oh, it's but
junk, yeah.
Yeah, but it was when Tony Hawk was popular, so they had to do something.
Oh, of course, yeah. It'd be cool. Stay hip. Down with the kids.
He does wear a helmet. He's a responsible dragon.
Well, I mean, it's a kid's game, so of course you gotta push the safety aspect of it, yeah. Number two.
Yeah.
This is a game that I guarantee you probably haven't played, or at least finished. And is, I bet you think it's probably a left field game.
Okay.
My number two this year is Subnautica.
Oh.
I fucking love this game. Like, love this game.
I haven't played it, but I really want to from what I hear about it.
It's amazing. It's like it's a standard, like, oh, look, you have arrived here via a mechanism of some sort of bad luck. And now you have to survive on this ocean planet. And you think, okay, I am just going to not die on this planet and survive like every other survival game. And then you do a few things and you're like, oh, shit, maybe there's a bit more to this. And then you do a bit more and you're like, oh, shit, there's a bit more to this. And then you get like towards the end game, you're like, fuck, there's a lot more to this.
Nice.
It's good. It's real good.
Yeah, I've been looking at picking it up next time it goes on sale on PS4, or I think maybe it's even on Switch now. I feel like it'd be a fun game.
It was free on the Epic Games launcher. In early December. Okay. So I remember seeing this game when it was in early access because it went live, I think, January last year. It's real good. It's polished.
Nice.
There's stuff like... if you don't know, you crash land. It's a sci-fi game. You crash land on an alien planet and your escape pod kind of lands, and then when you get out of your escape pod, you can see the ship that you crashed on crashed like a kilometer or two away.
Yeah.
And then... you have like a replicator on your escape pod and it can make certain things. So like, here's a thing you can create to not die by, you know, of dehydration. So you can go and catch some fish in the water and, you know, turn them into food and drink and stuff like that. But also craft better stuff that you might need to survive on a water planet. And
yeah, I do like that kind of like survival, like periodic upgrade kind of loop.
Yeah. And this is a pretty tight one. I've played a lot of really kind of open ones, but this one keeps you kind of on the thing. So it's real good. Like, the underwater environments are amazing. It's not really spoilery to say stuff like, it's kind of amazing when you leave the relative safetiness of your like shallow area where there's all pretty coral and stuff like that, and you go kind of move out and then you hear like underwater sounds the whole time, and you hear like a big like drawn out like long like deep noise, kind of like a whale but not really, and then you kind of look around and out of the gloom like this giant shadow is like edging towards you. And some shadows are good, some shadows not so good, but I kind of like the scariness of being underwater and a giant shadow emerging out of it. Like, there's something that's just unlike anything that you would have above water. Underwater is a whole different world, and there's some scary shit down there. It's real good.
Yeah, I've heard, like, it feels like a very chill game right up until it's not.
There's a moment where it's like, well, shit's getting real now. Like, I got to take it seriously. I can't just, like, have fun.
Yeah. But a lot of people have said that the best way to play it is to turn off the hunger and thirst meters so you can just focus on enjoying it instead of that constant maintenance.
I guess it depends on your personal preference. It's not that bad, really. When it's only when you get later on in the game, and you start venturing a bit further away from your escape pod and the safe shallow coral areas, that you really notice it. But kind of by that point, you've got enough stuff that you can get around it, so it's not really that bad. But it just depends if you want to play the aspect of the survival part of it or not.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the elements of survival games that gives me a lot of anxiety, so the ability to turn it off sounds like the best way to go for me. Yeah. But yeah, it sounds like that right kind of blend between like your Steam World dig, where you explore to get the things to upgrade to then explore further, and like the Minecrafty, buildy, crafty
Daisy
stuff.
Open world survival-y kind of deal.
So it feels like a good balance for me. I'm looking forward to checking it out next whatever sale.
Oh, 100%. Everyone should to play. It's a great game. Like I said, it's beautiful. You can play it in VR. as well.
Oh, that'd be almost too much.
It's pretty crazy because it's just the movement, you're moving so much that, yeah, it can get a bit, gets on top of you, especially when you're moving quickly. But there's all kinds of ocean life, like just exploring the ocean is great. Nice. Yeah, like objects appearing out of the gloom is always like an edge of your seat. Like, is this going to be a good thing for me or a bad thing for me?
Yeah.
You usually get an audio cue to tell you if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. Because there's definitely bad things out there. And as you move away, you kind of move into the depths a bit more. And you got to build some shit to make sure that you don't die underwater, especially when you go real deep. So,
Yeah, no, I'm definitely putting it on my to-get list. So I think I've already got it wishlisted on PS4. Cool. So my number two, and we're at almost an hour already, so I think we need to kind of jump forward a little bit. My number two game was actually a real debate. I knew kind of what my bottom tier ones would be, but the upper tier and the winner was a real hot contest for me between a couple of games. But number two ended up being God of War.
Oh, nice.
AKA Dad of War.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never got into the God of War franchise. It was a very kind of mask bro hack and slash anger fest, which the gameplay I enjoyed up until a point where I just got sick of the chain combo bullshit.
It seems like a game like Gears of War. You either got into it or you didn't.
Yeah, 100%. Mm. I think I played at least part of almost every God of War game between like the collections they did on the PS3 to bring forward to the PS2 games and review codes and stuff like that over the years, but never caught me. God of War being a bit more RPG-ish, kind of a soft reboot of the franchise, was right up my alley. Throwing the axe feels so good, and the story is so good, and it's Norse mythology, which is the best mythology.
And the fact that the protagonist is a very well-built, muscular man with a dad beard had nothing to do with it.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
I don't have a photo up on Instagram of like a freeze frame of the game where I'm pretending to kiss Kratos on the mouth. Like his characterization, the fact that he had characterization, gorgeous. He had a character arc, he developed, he learnt, he changed, he didn't just get angry and fox some whores in a bed to save the game.
He did that as well as other things.
But most importantly, Atreus, boy, was the best element of the game and every meme of 2018. So I really enjoyed it. I hope they announce a sequel very soon, even if it's going to be years off. I just want to know that this version of the God of War franchise is going to continue, because they left some breadcrumbs for it, and I am hungry for some bread. Give me that bread. Dad of War. Yes.
I sadly won't ever play because I never PS4.
Okay, that's number two. So
honorable mention before time.
Yeah, before we get on to number ones, let's give some honorable mentions. Games that were quite notable for the year but didn't quite make the cut. I've got three. I don't know how many you have.
I got two.
Okay, let's just touch on them quickly and just sort of say maybe why they didn't quite make the cut, but what was good about them.
My first one is Scum.
Okay, that makes sense.
What grabbed me about it and what was great is I really kind of like the really in-depth stats that your body has that you got to like.
Yeah, that was insane.
It was, when I first looked at it, I was like, fuck, this is just too much. And I just pressed the button to get rid of it because it was just too much at the time. But then I established myself in the game a bit more. I had some time to stop and like fuck with it and see what happened when I ate stuff and just watch the meters go. Really like that. It's nice. A really, really good system. It's fun watching you like eat stuff and then it sits in your stomach and then like slowly your stats go up and then it moves into your colon and then your colon fills up and it's like, now I'm going to press that almighty shit button and you take a shit. Like it was great. In like a weird way, in a weirdly satisfying way. So I thought it just on that alone, it was good. Also it beat DayZ to being a good zombie survival game. Fucking suck in DayZ. You suck. Thanks to I think it was Devolver. Was it Devolver? They sent us. I got a code. They sent me a code for that so I could play it. I very much enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you, Devolver. If it wasn't you, thank you, the actual publisher. We very much appreciate you, but I think it was Devolver. It feels like a Devolver game.
I should check this. Hold on.
Please do. I'm really, really anxious about this now.
And when I look in my emails, the first thing is, change your penis size in Scum. New Wild Hunter update.
Yes.
Was it Devolver?
This is what Wikipedia is for. Yes,
Devolver
is
Digital.
For.
Thank you very much. Okay. You're great. Thank God. You gave me some great games this year. I very much appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, honestly, Devolver really came through for us this year.
Oh, yeah. They've been awesome.
Yeah. Thank you very much, boys and girls at Devolver. Okay. Well, I've got three, so I'm going to just quickly barrel through two of them, and then I'm going to get to the big one. So, firstly, Pokemon Let's Go got an honorable mention. I really enjoyed it. It's been a great nostalgia boost, but the Go capture mechanic still doesn't quite work for me. It was fun for the first few kind of routes and towns and dungeons, but I'm never going to catch the 100 of each Pokemon you need to unlock the minigame thing or whatever. I'm up to the Pokemon League. I'm having fun still. Nothing's going to stop me from finishing it. I'm not going to be chasing down that hardcore catch mechanic stuff. It's nice not to have to fight everything, but at the same time, it's a little annoying. I'm sorry. Sorry, Pokemon.
Honorable mention number two.
Was Radiant Historia Perfect Chronology, which was a remake of Radiant Historia from the DS, coming forwards to the 3DS. Maybe one of the last RPGs I'm ever going to play on the console. It's time travel. It's branching timelines. It had a lot of extra content. They streamlined things like the combat. So if you smack an enemy in the real world, in the overworld, that you'd just be able to beat easily. You don't have to do the battle. I love that. So they streamlined a lot of things that stopped me from finishing it on DS. It didn't have the wow factor of some of the other games. Nothing wrong with it. I really liked it. Just not quite top five. But sweet. For that one, thank you, Nintendo, for sending us a code. I was very happy to play it. It was very nice. Thank you. Beautiful pixel art as well.
I'm going to throw a curveball out there. I'm going to stun you, like dead in your seat.
Oh, yeah?
I am going to honorable mention Pokemon Let's Go.
Okay. I did hear you playing this right before we started recording today.
I held it up to the microphones that played the battle music.
Yeah.
All right. So I bought this game I figured I wasn't going to buy it myself. I was like, it's yet another Pokemon game. I've already played Red Blue. I wasn't going to justify it for myself, but I thought this is a game that I think my girlfriend would like. So I'll buy it. And if she doesn't want to play it, then as a backup, I'll just play it. Like, it'll be fine. But I wasn't going to spend it on just myself. And so I bought it. I also bought the Pokeball accessory one.
Even I didn't get suckered into that one, dumb slut.
I got me a sweet Mew. So fuck you.
You know what? I traded with a friend online to have it in my Pokedex, and then I sent it back because as a battling Pokemon, Mew's not that shit hot.
It did fine for me. I'll speak more about it in a second. So my girlfriend didn't really know what to make of it, so she wanted me to play it a bit. So naturally, I obliged and played a bunch so she could kind of see how it was. There's some funny shit occurred from that. She wasn't really... She's not a gamer as such. The whole type system was quite overwhelming for her, which makes sense.
I still don't remember some of it.
There's lots of types. Her big thing was like, how do I know what types they are? Like, she would lose because she didn't know what types were. So what I did is I printed it out like a sheet for her that said like all the 151, all of them, that's what their types are. Here's a type chart. And now she's getting right into it. She fucking loves it now. She got a Clefairy, right? She didn't know how to pronounce Clefairy. So she pronounced it Clive Fairy.
Amazing.
Yep. So her Clefairy is now named Clive Fairy. And every time Clefairy comes up, she says Clive Fairy really obviously and laughs. I'm trying to get a reaction out of me because I keep correcting her.
That's cute.
She couldn't remember what the evolutions were. So her Blastoise is still named Squirtle. Her Charizard's still named Charmander. And her Venusaur is still named Bulbasaur. Because she can't remember it. We got the Pikachu edition because I asked her, do you want Pikachu or Eevee? She was a big Pikachu fan. We've been watching the the cartoon because she got into it. She's like, can you get that? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, we'll get a hand of it. So we got it. And she fucking loves whenever Pikachu talks. She's amused by it. Whenever Pikachu says anything, she just starts laughing. it's really adorable, actually. But she loves it. The game is great. I mean, it's red, blue again. I think the only reason why I really, really like it is because I haven't played Pokemon now for like 3 or 4 years.
That's so fair, yeah.
You know, it's like, it's the same game, but it's a bit more fresh now because I haven't played it for a while. With the catching stuff, I actually quite like the catching, but I don't like the catching end game.
Yeah, it gets like real tough.
It gets super annoying, and the amount of Ultra Balls you kind of need to power level is like expensive, and it's fucking annoying, and there's got to be a better way.
How do you get the raspberries that make it easy to catch things? Because I've only got a couple, and you can't buy them in shops as far as I can tell.
You have to put a Pokemon outside of its Pokeball, walk past a bush, hope that bush has a thing in it, so it tells you, your Pokemon tells you there's a thing in it, talk to them. But luckily, once you've defeated the Elite Four, because I've defeated the Elite Four, I've got like, my Pokedex is like 148 or something now. It's because I've been on holiday, so I have nothing else to do except play it while watching the cricket. So I've finished it. There's the Mewtwo Cave. You can walk around on the second floor and you can just pick up items. There's tons of like golden berries that make the catch easier. So there is a few things around that make it easier, but it's a pain in the ass how many Ultra Balls you need and the cost of them. Like, I didn't buy anything in the entire game because the game is fucking piss easy.
Yeah, you get so much money.
Yeah.
I bought a bunch of costumes for my Eevee, but that's about it.
Yeah, my Pikachu has, because you can do their hair as well, he has like the flick, and he's got a pair of sunnies on, and that's it. I refuse to put him in clothes. He's like, he's got sunnies and a flick of the hair, and that's it. Jess's Pikachu has bows and like red rimmed glasses on and like all that sort of stuff, and little outfits and stuff. But the game is good. I kind of want to see where they go for the Pokemon, mythical mainline title they're going on about.
Yeah.
Pokemon Let's Go, it's fun. It's good.
Yeah. I think if they are actually going to bring like the new mainline Pokemon out this year, as they're saying they will, we have to have seen footage of it by E3 at the latest.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's not coming.
Yeah.
On the Pokemon train, though, there is a movie that's up on Netflix now. Pokemon I Choose You, which is a cinematic retelling of the first few episodes of the original anime.
Oh, cool.
I haven't checked it out yet, but from what I've seen, it looks amazing. The art style's a little bit different. And they've also just announced a remake, it seems like, of the original Pokemon, the first movie, rendered in 3D, which could be really cool. I'm sure there'll be extra tweaks to the storyline or whatever to make it interesting beyond just being a recreation. But yeah. Pokemon, it's out there.
It's fun, but it needs to fix a few things. Hopefully they do fix it for the mainline title. The catching thing is good, like I said, but it's just end game. It's power leveling sucks. It's horrible to power level. Yeah,
really is. Yeah. Okay, well, my final honorable mention before we get into the number ones might be a bit divisive. I gave it to Red Dead Redemption 2.
And I know that you had a bit of trouble kind of really getting into the flow of it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. It didn't catch me. I found it a bit monotonous. I didn't want to do any of the side stuff.
Have you finished
in the last
it yet?
Week? No, right, definitely not.
Okay, that's probably why it's not. It's just not honorable mention and not in the list.
Yeah, look, I am up to Saint-Denis at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm about midway through the story chunk of that. I've been playing it over the last week and I've kind of gotten more into it. I've been having fun blasting through some missions because I feel like I've hit a point where a lot of the cool, stranger stuff is going on, and the bayou seems to be a hotbed for all the cool, weird shit.
Yeah, there's a bunch of shit that happens in there.
Yeah. So I'm getting into it, but yeah, it took so long to catch me. And the level of like character maintenance and stuff you have to do straight off the bat is intimidating, and it's a lot thrown you at once. I had to Google how to find my hair tonics in my inventory to be able to start growing my beard out more, because it was not obvious.
Yeah, I wish it held your hand a little bit more at the start.
Yeah, definitely.
To guide you, like, here's the things you need to know in the game, and then you can go off and do whatever you want. It doesn't do that. It just sort of says, like, here's a boring intro, now you're good.
Oh, fuck that intro.
Now you're good, and then, like, you don't realize that there's still more missions to go that guide you through it further. It's a bit...
Yeah, and then it has these passive little prompts that tell you everything you need to know straight off the bat and then never again. It's like, here's how you access your journal. Here's how you access your kit. Here's how you set up a temporary campsite.
And by the time you've read, or by the time you realize that information is on screen, it then goes. You're like,
it's gone, yeah.
The fuck?
Literally, after I figured out how to open my kit to use my hair tonics and pomade, which I thought you could only use while shaving because mm-hmm. I couldn't figure out how to use the ones I was carrying. I also realized, oh yeah, he's got a journal that I can look at. And I hadn't looked at it since the original prompt to show me how to do it. So it was on like the second page of 120 pages of journal. Also, it was really quick, like, filling up all the camp upgrades, and now there's just nothing to do except restock.
Yeah, I did all that as well.
Because I did it early, because I figured, like, when you move to the Riverside camp, you added an option to have a boat, so I figured, oh, each successive campsite's going to unlock more stuff. Nope.
That's basically it.
So I'm getting into it now, especially now that there's guides and stuff, so I can make sure, in this huge world, I don't miss any of the cool interactions. But I think despite being this early in the game, the completion stats said I'd already met 22 of the 25 strangers. So I didn't realize that I'd hit so many of them so early. So yeah, I'm enjoying it now. Didn't grab me at first. I hear the endgame's amazing and the epilogue sets everything right and all this stuff. I got so desperate that I almost started reading the Red Dead Wiki today. Yeah, and it's just like, oh yeah, blah blah character's dead. I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, don't try not to play it out.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
I'm getting there. Anyway, that's my sort of top tier honorable mention before we get to the number ones.
All right. Well, let's get to the number ones then.
Yeah. Cliff, what's your number one game of 2018 game of the year game?
Red Dead Redemption 2.
Holy shit. I was so surprised. I didn't expect that at all.
So let's break it down a little bit for it. A bit further. The start sucks because the snow bit is way too long. Way too long.
It shouldn't be the first way you interact with the game.
No, it shouldn't be. Or they needed to change that up. It's fine as an opening, but they need to change out how it flows and how quickly you get out of the fucking snow.
Yeah, at the very least, let me walk on some ground before trudging through snow. That's all I ask.
Yeah, and it definitely needs to hold your hand a little bit more to tell you how the things you're going to need to use in the game. It needs to hold your hand mm-hmm. more and force you to do the missions earlier. So
yes.
Shorten the snow bit, force you to do the missions that like... unlock normal stuff that you then do throughout the rest of the game because there's so much to do and then let you free on the world. That's what it needs to do. It doesn't do that. It kind of lets you free too early and then you kind of... Then I went off to explore straight away because, again, going back to Greece or however you say it, the exploratory part of Red Dead is insanely good. Insanely good. The world is so rich. There's so much stuff in it. Where we were saying that Spider-Man, there's always something happening in Spider-Man, but it's the same two or three things. In Red Dead, there's so much more than that. Like, it's amazing. Yeah.
It is, like, the number of times I've hit, like, multiple stranger encounters traveling from A to B between missions or whatever, of course, there's so much backtracking. I was hiking from the bayou out to the middle of nowhere to meet up with one of the Native American dudes. I got halfway there, and this chick's like, y'all, can you take me back to the town you just fucking came from? It's like, yeah, all right, fine. It's amazing. Yeah. The walking speed is too slow.
It's a very slow game. It's a slow burn.
Yeah.
And you immediately see what's going on. And especially if you know the story of Red Dead 1, you know that, like, of course, stuff, it doesn't work out. Like,
yeah,
Dutch is not a good guy, no matter how much he tries to think he is. He's not a good,
and I'm enjoying that character heel turn as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like in the Saint-Denis stuff, it's just starting to hit where he's starting to get a bit...
And Arthur's just like, come on, man. Like, it's not working. Like, we need to move. We need to actually, like, adjust. And Dutch is like, one more score. And you're like, oh, man, this is going to end so like, bad.
One more fucking score. You're all turning against me.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the basic beats of Red Dead 1, but it's far enough away that I don't have, like, exact memory of which of the gang members I met up and fought and killed or whatever. So I don't exactly know where it's going to be in the end game. And that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The one advantage to there being such a game between the gap between the games. I'm getting into it now, but no.
I will warn you, there is a section of the game that completely derails the pacing.
I have heard this, yeah.
And it takes you, it doesn't do enough in where it goes to make it good. It's too quick because you get to this spot in the game, in the story, and you do the thing and then you leave it. And there's no impact on the game whatsoever. It just completely derails it.
Is this the location I believe I know of where you only go there for the missions, you never get to go back, but they found it in like the online data and thought it was going to be a big deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's, yeah. Some things happen and you go off, you kind of like, the story takes you to an in direction and then you get brought back, but there's no point to the other part. It needs to it needed to develop that, either ditch it completely or develop it more. But by the time you get to the end, like the end of the main story, and like you just like, you know exactly where it's going to go, but the journey,
I think I have a strong inkling of how the end game reveal is going to work. I won't say anything in case I'm wrong.
It's not really a spoiler to say that Dutch's vision is not is not where you really want to go. And it, yeah, you know, as the main character, you start thinking like, why do we keep doing these things that Dutch keeps doing? It's not where we need to go. And so things just like, it gets all out of hand, but the way it happens, like, you know it's happening, but the way it happens, you're just like, oh man, this is like, it's great to watch. And when you get to the, when you do the final mission and you get to the end, and I was just sitting there just like, I was just drained. And I was just like, shit, this, the roller coaster of the, like, the fifth or sixth chapter or something, whichever the last chapter is.
Six chapters and then the epilogue.
Yeah, the sixth chapter is just nuts. And there's some great moments where they do some like music montages as well. And the music,
Love a montage.
The music montages though are so good in the late game.
Yeah.
So good. Okay. The way they work. It's just such a great game. There's so much to explore. The epilogues are kind of, they're okay. They don't really necessarily need them in there.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need to know how John goes from like the events of the like Red Dead 2 to where he goes into Red Dead 1. You can just see how it would go normally, but they added it in there. There's some fun moments in it, and there's some kind of cool moments in there as well. Didn't necessarily need it. They could have expanded out that derailing bit to make it more important and cut out the John stuff, but it's still good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was one particular little moment in the game is what kind of hooked me back in to keep playing it. I won't say it on here because it is a bit of a story spoiler, but I'll talk to you about it after the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my game of the year for 2018, Year of Our Lord, 2018, is Marvel's Spider-Man.
It's pretty great.
Because in the words of Marie Kondo, the girl who loves to clean, it brought me joy. And I really liked it. Like you said, the movement is fantastic. Like, it's a great superhero game. The combat is like as perfect as anything's been since Batman Arkham.
I didn't like it at the start because I didn't feel like there was enough to get me out of having my ass kicked a bunch. But as you got more and more stuff, you got more fluid.
Yeah, definitely coming back each time for the DLC, it took me a hot minute to kind of realign myself with the controls. But once you're in the swing of it and you get some of the upgrades that the patterns and the skills you can get, like the one where if you dodge an attack, Spider-Man automatically like webs them in the face, so you can kind of crowd control a bit easier. That, the new version of like the chronology and the canon of the Spider-Man universe meant that I had an idea of where things were going, but I never knew exactly what was going to happen. It was just overall, like, I didn't have anything negative to say about it.
The best part about it was the missions were short. So it didn't linger for half an hour in a mission. You could do a mission in 5 or 10 minutes and it was done. Move on.
Yeah.
It was great.
For me, it was the little touches of polish that really sold it for me. A lot of the time you're having to travel across the entire island of Manhattan to get to the next mission.
Which with the mechanisms was so fun. Just to swing away. Was so fun
to begin with. But on top of that, you had just enough content between Jameson's podcast and like Mary Jane or whoever talking to you while you're going, that it gave you something to focus on.
Calling you like, oh, where are you? It's like, oh, I'm on my way. You're like fighting bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just lots of little touches that really made it so that it never felt like a slog going back and forth. Plus the animations for the fast travel were just really cute with Spider-Man riding the subway. The thing that really, really did it for me was the fact that for all of his ambient dialogue, they recorded it twice. Once in, like, standard voice and once in kind of a breathy voice. So that if you're web-swinging while you're having a conversation with someone, it actually sounds like he's exerting himself. Or if you're talking mid-fight, he's a little out of breath. It was completely unnecessary, but they recorded it twice and made it so seamless that they could transition between the two audio tracks at any time.
It was, yeah, and the little bits were great in that.
That is a level of love that every game deserves. Because you are a strong, powerful, independent open world sandbox, and you deserve to be loved.
Not unlike Treat yourself. Red Dead 2, but in a different way.
Yeah.
In a slow, exploratory way.
I keep trying to hunt animals, but I keep forgetting to buy ammo for my varmint rifle, so I just keep destroying everything.
Oops. You're a bad cowboy.
I know. But that was 2018!
We did it! We had some great games. We had some great games.
There were so many games not on this list. Mm-hmm. I had a painful time cutting it down. If you agree, tell us. If you disagreed, tell us. What games did we forget? Because I think the list that I used didn't include a lot of indie stuff. I did really want to include The Missing, J.J. Macfield in the case of the Island of Memories or something, which is a 2D platformer with a girl who has to mutilate her body to be able to get through obstacles. It's weird and gory in just the right way. Like, she'll throw herself into a pit of spikes so that her legs get broken off, and that means you can crawl under low gaps, stuff like that. Or get set on fire so she can burn down an obstacle. It's grisly, but presented in a way so it's not like a gore fest, which I really appreciated. Okay, well, we've been going for a fair while now, but do we want to really quickly touch on a couple of games we're interested in next year coming?
So real quick, what games are you looking forward to next year?
I'm just going to do all three really quickly.
Just do it, yeah.
Okay, so again, a lot to pick from. Not as many as I thought, but we are early days.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled, a remake of Crash Team Racing, which was one of my favorite PS1 games. I played the shit out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot wait, but it's not till like July or something. So Sony hates me. Next up, Untitled Goose Game, which is a local production from here in Melbourne. It just looks like another ridiculously fun little game like Donut County. They're also making shirts that have the goose on it that are like downy where the goose is, which I think is adorable, and socks that look like the goose as well. Mm-hmm. And finally, a game that I keep forgetting about, but I'm very happy every time I remember, Ghost of Tsushima, which is an open world explorer game set in like the peak of samurai Japan. And it looks gorgeous. They showed footage at E3 this year, which was fighting another samurai under a field of cherry blossoms. It's gorgeous, and I can't wait for it. And it looks respectfully like casted and written, which is fun for a game that has a non-white ethnic background. So yeah, that, and then there was like six other games I wanted to mention, but I'm limiting myself, so I'll talk about them when they get here.
Mm-hmm. So the games I'm looking forward to, or I'm curious about in 2019, mm-hmm. I mean, Final Fantasy VII, but let's face it, that's not going to happen, so that's barely a mention.
Such an optimist.
Fuck you, Squeenix. Give us that game, damn it. Just don't make any new games. Don't make Final Fantasy XVI. Don't do it. Put all your people on Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, they haven't even mentioned 16 yet.
It'll make more money than 16 will. I guarantee it.
It will.
It make more money than any of your other games. Except maybe the original run of Final Fantasy VII. But anyway. I'm looking forward to the remake of Medieval.
I keep forgetting about that Medieval. One.
That was one of the games on PS1 that I loved. I hope they just do a direct remake, because they made like a half remake a few years ago for the Vita.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was.
Like they up-resed it or whatever.
It was terrible because they changed it. So, no, give me the original game now.
It's just Medieval 1 they're doing. It's not 1 and 2, isn't it?
Well, I never really played 1, because 2, like, I got 2, and I played it, and I was like,
it
trailed off. But Medieval, looking forward to it. I kind of want to see what Streets of Rage 4 is.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because I was a big fan of Streets of Rage on the Mega Drive generation. So, four, let's give it a crack. And after playing Pokemon Let's Go, I'm interested to see what they're going to do with the Pokemon Switch game. No. Please, Breath of the Wild, please.
Yes.
Give us a new game. Give us a like something different. Something that's worthy of the technology we have in games now, because the Pokemon games, for all Let's Go is great, it's red and blue. It was made in the 90s. Yeah. It's the same fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
So please give us something new. Give us some more. Give us an open world. I love the Let's Go. You encounter them when you see them. So you can walk up to them.
Yeah, and that bit I love.
Amazing. Do more of that in an open world, like a big open area.
Mm.
Give us some Pokemon Snap shit inside of it. Oh, come on.
Okay. Do it. That sounds amazing. Yes. All right. Well, you said four, so I'm going to add one more. Another game that I'm really looking forward to for this coming year, I'm going to go with another non-obvious choice, Control, from Remedy, the guy who brought us Alan Wake, and that angry guy who could jump in slow motion, Max Payne. It's all about a building of just anomalous research where physics is constantly getting fucked, and it looks like a real trip. I'm so excited, because it's all about, like, brutalist architecture, which I love, because it's so ugly. In a perfect way.
Well, I mean, you said four, but Final Fantasy VII doesn't count, really. So, Half-Life 3?
Also doesn't really count. And two don't count, so make a one.
Portal 3?
You know what? It's an infinite number of don't counts. Left 4 Dead 3. One. Anything that ends in 3.
No.
Also, I can't wait to play Kingdom Hearts 3. It's like 3 weeks
away. That doesn't count, because it ends in 3. I'm so fucking excited.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Anyway, that's the end of the episode. Thanks for tuning in for the Game of the Year episode. Sorry it's a little bit late. I've been deathly sick for 2 weeks. This is the first time period. I can really...
It's junk. Everyone knows it. Yeah.
I sounded like a monster, so be glad you didn't have to hear it. We'll be back to regular shit next week, probably, where we can talk about all the games we've been playing over the Christmas period. Because we didn't have time today. Because we're at, oh god, an hour and 25 minutes.
Something, something, something. Fuck Sidechain Compression and Game Boy by Rocco W.
Yeah, that's the sound that you hear at the start and end of the episode.
It's pretty good.
It is. If you want to find us on the internet, indoorsmanpodcast.com, at indoorsmanpod on Twitter and Instagram, The Indoorsman on Facebook, and also I'm at Ponk on Twitter, and he's at Clifford Monkey, but don't bother talking to him because he'll never talk back to you.
But email contact at indoorsmanpodcast.com.
Yeah. You know who will talk to you if you talk to them on Twitter? Target, especially if you make fun of their hold music like I did today. We'd also love it if you could subscribe, review, and rate the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, your back of your mum's toilet door, anywhere. Just say nice things about us, please. We're so dependent on your love.
We need it.
We're very unhealthy. Like, we're vampires. Mentally.
We're emotional vampires. Mm.
Yes.
But for now, he's been 2018 Matt.
And he has been last year's fashion Cliff. And by endorsement tradition, we'll send you off by saying that if you need to recover any valuables from 2018, they're in the lost and found.
They're not. So, I sold them.
Yeah, none of the good stuff's left.
Also, I'm going to go play with my brand new kitten.
I'm going to go play Red Dead. Damn it, I want to play with a kitten.
If Brand New Kitten was a game, it would get number one. But it's not, so...
I'm gonna go find my cat and consider throwing her off the balcony so I can get a new one.
I mean, you could just get another one.
I'm not ready to be the two-cat gay.
Big crazy cat lady.
Mm. There's hope for love for me now. I don't need to do it. Anyway, bye.
Bye.